Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 20th. Mayor Blong says collaboration needed for Midland's future. Mayor announces creation of task force to deal with youth issues. This story was written by Stuart Doreen. Mayor Lori Blong's keynote address Wednesday at the State of City Luncheon was an acknowledgement of a younger community and a call to action to when it came to collaboration between taxing entities. Quote, "Will we make the investment today so people have what they need in the future?" Blong said. Blong specially pointed out during the Midland Chamber of Commerce event that she is creating a mayor's task force to respond to a community problem, specifically discipline inside Midland's public schools and in the community. She said collaboration is needed from leaders inside the city, school district, law enforcement, county government, the courts, and the community. Quote, "Until we see Midland kids as our kids, we will see the problem continue," Blong stated. Improved discipline will help other collaborative efforts community-wide, including the workforce training and the literacy gains required in Midland. She also told a packed Bush Convention Center that Midland's considerable resources are required to deal with these failings in the community. Blong told those in attendance Midland's population is getting younger, with more than 60% under the age of 40. That translates to more than 104,000 people between the ages of 0 and 30. A presentation offered also reported 36,000 between 40 and 59, 20,000 between 60 and 79, and 4,000 at 80 years of age and older. She said Midland is like the rest of the country in the midst of a transition with the rise of younger leaders in government and the private sector. Blong talked about the need to invest in the future, including putting public money into places like the former Western United Life Building in downtown Midland or at State Highway 191 and 158. Such investment, she said, will mean an increase in property taxes through development. Midlanders can look back at the investment of water and sewer to the Scarborough Sports Complex as a time when similar investment paid off. She said collaboration between entities will pay off with road development, delivery of water to places like the city of Midland and beyond, or helping to deal with the expansion in Northeast and Southwest Midland, and other places inside the county. Before the mayor's keynote, the Midland Chamber of Commerce honored Sharla Hotchkiss with the WIN Award, which honors someone who made an impact through economic development. The award was created in honor of Marvin WIN, former CEO of the Midland Chamber of Commerce. Trinity Trial. Opening arguments take place. Testimony begins. The story was written by Iris Foster. A female teen at the center of the case that resulted in the arrest of four Trinity administrators testified she came forward after the arrest of school teachers at another Midland private school. The teen testified she had left Trinity and enrolled in Midland Christian School, and when she saw the arrest take place there in February 2022, she told Midland Rape Crisis and Children's Advocacy Center she had come to believe that Trinity approached her situation the wrong way. The testimony came during the afternoon session of the first day of the trial of four Trinity school administrators charged with failure to make a required child abuse report. Morning opening arguments. Beginning with the statement that parents take a leap of faith sending their children to school, Assistant District Attorney Lacey Holloman addressed the jury, which is evenly mixed between men and women. She went on to describe nude photos being sent between two middle school students, and when it was reported by another student just before Christmas 2019. Holloman said the female student's parents were concerned, but no discussions occurred until after the holidays. Several students were subsequently interviewed, along with both teens involved and their parents. Crystal Myers, head of middle school, filed an online report to CPS in January 2020, and COVID-19 caused the school to go to virtual instruction. The female's parents ultimately removed her from Trinity, believing the school was focused on protecting the male student and its reputation. In their opening remarks, the four defense attorneys laid into the character of the female teen, her family members, and the police detective. Frank Sellers stated that none of the seven students interviewed corroborated the female story about groping and inappropriate touching incidents. Both sets of parents were in the loop from the very beginning, he stated, and emails praising the work of his client, Myers, and the staff were sent by the female's parents after the male student was suspended for 3 days. Sellers then turned the spotlight on Midland Police Department Detective Jay Alonzo, who, he said, quote, has started prosecuting administrators at private schools, end quote. Based upon information supplied by the female student's mother, the detective called in Child Advocacy Center in February 2022 to do a forensic interview with the child over 2 years after the initial complaint of abuse. Attorney Daniel Hurley described this trial as the most tragic case of the childhood telephone game, which distorts information. His client, Todd Freeze, was a former minor and major league umpire used to calling them like he saw it. Freeze wanted to be certain there was cause to believe through investigating before reporting something that could ruin lives. Brian Carney, representing head of school Shelby Hammer, said he went over to the school as the officers were making the arrests. He followed them to Midland Police Department, but was refused initial access to them. He also derided Alonzo for listening to the blame-thrower drama mama and getting arrest warrants before search warrants had been executed. Allison Clayton ended defense opening arguments simply by saying her client, Adrienne Clifton, was only involved in the two meetings with the male and female students' parents and just has an administrative role at the school. Witness calling begins. The state began calling witnesses just before the lunch break, one a former CPS records analyst from Austin, and the other the custodian of records at the Children's Advocacy Center. At issue was how long the report sent online by Myers to CPS was retained when no action was deemed necessary by that agency. Then the state called the teenage girl who claimed she was groped and fondled by another student to the stand for the rest of the afternoon. Assistant District Attorney Jennifer Lively took the teen through her childhood of dance, twirling, cheerleading, and pageants. She explained her relationship with the four defendants. Myers was her mother's friend, her fifth-grade science teacher, and later her principal. Freeze was her brother's history teacher and later dean of students. Clifton worked in the office and was the mother of an older cheerleader she admired, and Hammer was head of school and a neighbor. Lively explored the young woman's understanding of the birds and the bees, and she testified that, at age 12, she had never had the talk with her mother. She further indicated she was naive about dealing with a young man who was 2 years older. She explained that his touching of various body parts occurred for 4 months during the fall semester of 2019 and left her feeling gross and very confused. However, she conversed with him via texts and Instagram outside of the three classes they shared. The first person she told about the incidents was a fellow male student, and he told someone who reported it to the dean of students, Freeze. She didn't tell her parents until it was brought to light, she said. She returned to Trinity in the fall of 2020 because the young man had moved on to high school. However, she said she suffered panic attacks and asked her parents if she could change schools. She enrolled at Midland Christian School, and when she saw the arrest that occurred there, she told the Children's Advocacy Center of her situation. Sellers began grilling the teen about the attention she's garnered from these criminal cases and about a TikTok post. Judge David Rogers recessed court for the day in the midst of defense attorney's cross-examination. Sixth Annual Midland Earth Day Festival takes place Saturday. The story was written by Morgan Taylor Thomas. What better way to celebrate Earth Day in Midland than at the 6th Annual Earth Day Festival hosted by nonprofit Keep Midland Beautiful? Started in 1970, Earth Day remains an annual celebration used to demonstrate support for environmental protection. Each year, the Earth Day team located in Washington, D.C., creates a theme for the April 22nd holiday based on global action. For 2023, the motto, Invest in Our Planet, can be found throughout their informational site at earthday.org, along with ways to take action throughout the year. Doreen Womack, Executive Director for Keep Midland Beautiful, gave the Reporter Telegram the scoop on what to expect for this year's festivities. 12 Midland groups will be at the festival with hands-on activities and educational opportunities for community members of all ages. The KMB Tree Keepers will be giving out 200 5-gallon native trees strong enough to withstand West Texas weather and terrain, while the Midland County Environmental Officer Division mixes game show-esque entertainment with environmental education. Other organizations include Cracked Egg Acres, which usually brings some chickens and roosters, Goddard Junior High Teen Leadership, Llano Estacado Chapter of Texas Master Naturalists, Centennial Park, Permian Basin Master Gardeners, Permian Basin Regional Oxy 1.5 Planning Commission, T2Go, and Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Attendees can expect other interactive spaces, such as recipe and food demonstrations, courtesy of the West Texas Food Bank, seed ball making, tips and tricks on when and how to plant certain fruits, vegetables, and flowers, and even a tomato planting class, one of the best ways for families to create positive change together, according to Womack. Quote, so many people that move into our area don't realize they can't plant the same things they did. I did that 30-plus years ago, Womack joked. Personally, Womack found a passion in water awareness and encourages people to fix small habits, such as what time of day they water their yard, to promote big change. Quote, living in West Texas for so many years, we started to really see the effects of drought in our area, on our trees, and on our plants, Womack explained. Knowing that our city and county officials are constantly on the lookout for more water sources, and also knowing what is going on in the rest of the world, water is a huge issue for us, and we can't live without it, end quote. To keep up with KMB, check out its website at keepmidlandbeautiful.org, Facebook at facebook.com/keepmidland-beautiful, or Instagram at Keep Midland Beautiful. Saturday's Earth Day Festival will take place from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the West Texas Food Bank, located at 1601 West Cliff Drive. Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter-Telegram on Thursday, April 20th. Wayne Helms, age 68, of Midland, suddenly passed away on Monday, April 17th. Services will be held at Stonegate Fellowship on Friday, April 21st at 11 a.m. Wayne was born in Rotan, Texas in 1954 to Clarence Helms and Shirley Byram. He married his wife, Tanya Helms, on May 9, 1974, and had two beautiful daughters, Shelley Crossland and Tasha Ramos. Wayne is survived by his mother, Shirley Byram, his beautiful wife, Tanya Helms, and his two daughters and their husbands, Shelley and Cody Crossland, and Tasha and Joel Ramos. Wayne also leaves behind six grandchildren. Wayne is preceded in death by his father, Clarence Helms. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to the West Texas Food Bank in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. William Bryant Mueller, also known as Bill Mueller, age 75, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, April 13th. A visitation will be held from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. on Friday, April 21st, at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Memorial service will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, April 22nd, at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. Bill was born in St. Louis, Missouri, to Roy and Daisy Mueller. He grew up in Kirkwood, Missouri. It was at Tulsa University where he met his soulmate and wife of 53 years, Ann Brooke Schloss Mueller. Bill is survived by his children, Bryant and Bridget Mueller, Aaron and Ireland Mueller, and Ashley and Brandon King. He also is survived by seven grandchildren. Bill began his career with Union Oil Company, which led to a successful 35-year journey around the globe. He then followed a dream and co-founded Antlers Exploration LLC, an independent exploration company where he continued to be an industry leader in the field of geophysics. Bill is preceded in death by his loving parents, Roy and Daisy Mueller, James and Elizabeth Schloss, and sister-in-law, Kate Tabor. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Midland Children's Rehabilitation Center. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Jose Luis Piardo, age 73, of Midland, passed away Sunday, April 16th. Viewing will be at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home and Chapel, 405 North Terrell in Midland, on Thursday, April 20th, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Friday, April 21st, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. A prayer service will be held on Friday at 7 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Chapel, with Pastor Martin Ortega officiating. Funeral service will be held on Saturday, April 22nd at 10 a.m. at Emmanuel Baptist Church, 1800 Garden Lane in Midland. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Arrangements were made with Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin at nts-online.net, or you can visit the website at LlewellynGarciaPipkinFH.com. Marilyn Sue Potter, age 79, of Midland, passed away Sunday, April 16th. She was born July 3, 1943, in Ardmore, Oklahoma. A memorial service will be held Saturday, April 22nd, at 10 a.m. at Ellis Risthaven Funeral Home.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, April 20th, 2023. Happening. Three things to do in Midland this weekend, April 21st through 23rd, by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Rediscover Norteño. Over at the La Hacienda Event Center, Azteca Records brings Norteño Sax to West Texas through the Viva Chihuahua Fest 2023. Similar to traditional Norteño, the version showcased at Chihuahua Fest incorporates an alto saxophone, making the primary instruments both sax and accordion. Playing at this year's festival will be Norteño Superstars, La Maquinaria Norteña, La Fiera de Ojinaga, La Energía Norteña, Los Pescadores del Rio Conchos, La Encuentro Norteña, La Alianza Norteña, La Furia del Bravo, Conjunto Amanecer, Manuel Reza, and Los Cosadores del Cerro. For more information on the artists, visit VivaChihuahuaFest.com. Tickets can be bought online. Friday starts at 8 p.m. 12,610 State Highway 191. Rock out with local tunes. A repeat performer at the destination, local country and rock cover band Texas Rain brings in the weekend activities with a set packed full of fan favorite hits, such as Guns N' Roses' Sweet Child of Mine, REO Speedwagon's Take It on the Run, and more. Led by vocalist Andrea Despain, the seven-person team has performed together for years and showcase an incomparable energy and connection on stage. Bar and food truck service will be available. Pre-sale tickets cost $10 and raise to $12 at the door. Purchase at thedestinationmidland.com. To reserve a table, call 432-352-0913. Saturday, doors open at 7 p.m., music at 8 p.m., 1705 West Industrial. Chill with cold sips and shopping. Wind down and cool off from the sudden spring heat, surrounded by fellow Midlanders. The Boss Babe Spring Market, featuring women-owned and operated local businesses, will be on site at Tall City Brewing Company, along with flowing taps and delicious treats. Attendees can find items such as beauty supplies and clothes to homemade cleaning products and animal goods throughout the pop-up shops. No cover charge necessary, but bring your spending money. Sunday, noon, 3303 West Golf Course. What's Up with Midland? By Morgan Taylor Thomas. At the destination. Open mic night, Thursday. Friday Night Live, Bearded Strangers, Friday. Texas Rain, Saturday. Bring Your Own Blues Open Blues Jam, April 27th. Friday Night Live, Pump Handle Vandals, April 28th. Rock the Basin, Back to the 80s Party with MCT, April 29th. Eccentric Brewing Company, Comedy Night, April 29th. At the Horseshoe, Moto Extreme Circus, Friday. Oil Patch Agility Club, Saturday through Monday. At La Hacienda Event Center, Viva Chihuahua Fest, 2023, Friday. At the Museum of the Southwest, Downtown Midland Farmers Market, every Saturday. At the Sibley Nature Center, Spring Festival, April 29th. At the Tailgate, Colby Cooper, Thursday. Basin Burnout, Pecos and the Rooftops, April 29th. At Tall City Brewing Company, Boss Babe Market, Sunday. At Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, The Mavericks, Friday. Blippi, The Wonderful World Tour, Saturday. Permian Basin String Quartet, Sunday. ZZ Top, April 25th. Nick plus Desi, Broadway Song, Dance, and Romance, April 27th. Los Mas Masters, Zagar Ramos, April 29th. At West Texas Food Bank with Keep Midland Beautiful, Earth Day Festival, Saturday. Small Bites. Nominate your favorite local restaurants in Reader's Choice by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Want to see your favorite local food truck, barbecue joint, Margarita Masters, Queso Connoisseurs, or Happy Hour Spots proudly display a 2023 Reader's Choice winner plaque? Running through May 1st, you have the chance to nominate your beloved spots in more than 50 categories. All you have to do is visit MidlandReporterTelegram.secondstreetapp.com/MRT-readers-choice-awards-2023/. And write in the name of your selection. Don't fret. You can nominate your Munchie Manor once a day. So get started. Note, some businesses purchased a nomination button to make it easier on their fans. If you're voting for a business that purchased a nomination button, please use it. Restaurant Reader's Choice categories include appetizers, Asian cuisine, bakery, barbecue, breakfast, buffet, burrito, casual dining, chicken, chicken fried steak, chicken wings, coffee shop, contemporary casual, date night, destination restaurant, Permian Basin, donuts, draft beer selection, fajitas, family restaurant, fast food, fine dining, first date, food truck, French fries, frozen yogurt, full service restaurant, guacamole, hamburger, happy hour, hot dog, ice cream, Italian food, kolaches, lounge nightclub, sports bar, pub, lunch, margarita, Mexican food, milkshake, nachos, new restaurant, pizza, private club dining, queso, romantic spot, salad bar, salsa, sandwich, seafood, smoothies, steakhouse, sweet tea, tacos, top wait staff, wine bar, and wine selection. Starting May 8th, the top 5 nominees from each category will be placed against each other in a month-long voting period. More information on the voting process will come out closer to time.
This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read Odessa American for Saturday, April 15, 2023. Odessa woman gets 40 years in husband's death. A 31-year-old Odessa woman was sentenced to 40 years in prison Wednesday after admitting she shot her husband to death in May 2021. Clara Jasmine Ledward was indicted on a single murder count in September 2021 in connection with the May 14, 2021 death of Jacob Ledward, 24. According to the Odessa Police Department, Clara Ledward was shot and taken into custody by authorities in Ennaja, Chihuahua, Mexico, 2 months following the death of her husband. Jacob Ledward's body was found inside his home in the 2000 block of East 7th Street after relatives asked police to conduct a welfare check. Ledward had been scheduled to go on trial earlier this month in the 70th Ector County District Court. This is Christy, and I'm continuing to read Odessa American for Saturday, April 15, 2023. This is Opinion. Council proves again they have double standard. The point, Odessa council members once again engaging in hypocrisy. And yes, we have the emails that show the city's human resources department did know about the fire cadet investigation. It's a shame that some employees didn't get the send-off they deserve after dedicating their careers to the city of Odessa. Top of the list is likely former Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton. The Strawripe Village, held every year at McKinney Park, was certainly his baby. He grew it from a few displays to a drive-through event that attracts thousands of visitors each year and is a feather in the cap of Odessa. It's a shame that Patton simply retired with no fanfare after being treated badly by interim city manager Agapito Bernal. To recap, Patton wanted to fire Deputy Director Matt Pressman, who got drunk at a work conference in Frisco and ended up urinating outside where others were nearby. A co-worker complained, and Patton told Bernal he was going to fire the man. But Bernal disagreed and instead gave the man a week suspension without pay. And here's the really bad part. Told Patton he was also going to be suspended for a week because of Chrisman's actions. Say what? So Patton is supposed to know how much each of his employees can drink? He's supposed to know that maybe they might just decide to pee outside? What? It's funny to us that he is supposed to do all of this for, again, an adult. By the way, that adult is now acting as the interim Parks and Recreation Director in the wake of Patton's retirement. It's absurd, but also clearly illustrates that some folks working for the city can get away with just about anything as long as they are not targets of the controlling faction of the Odessa City Council, which we believe Patton was. Why was he a target? Who knows? Maybe because of the purchase of some expensive Christmas trees many elected officials like to throw in the faces of past council members? Who knows? We wish Patton a happy retirement and thank him for a number of good works throughout his career. We are sure many other Odessans also wish him well and would have turned out for a nice little punch and cookies farewell. Nothing like that was planned by the current brain trust downtown. We're sure new spin master Monica McDaniel would have taken some excellent photos of grinning council members at the event. Oh, by the way, we just learned Monday her salary is supposed to top out at $101,163. She's making $1,055,000. But while we are on employees who did or did not get the send-off they deserve, former fire chief John Alvarez did get a good send-off. In fact, it was standing room only when he left the city. Why mention that? Well, because to hear some elective Pinocchios tell it, Alvarez's departure was a good thing, and the troops are so happy now that no one else has quit OFR in 30 days. And yet Odessa firefighters turned out in large numbers for the event, and cheered for Alvarez and wished him a happy retirement. Do guys do that if they hate the guy leaving? Nope, just a few more lies from elected officials. So we learned that it's been a month since anyone quit the OFR from Councilmember Mark Mata, who made an appearance on KCRS 550 Thursday morning. Mata went on the air to talk about attorney Tommy Sheen's investigation into injuries sustained by OFR cadets last August. Sheen told the city council Tuesday night Alvarez engaged in a cover-up of the injuries. He claimed Alvarez purposely kept HR and the city's legal department out of the loop for weeks and ignored HR's recommendation to fire the two employees responsible. He further claimed the only paper trail he could find consisted of pre-disciplinary hearing documents. The OA followed up with Sheen's report with phone calls to Alvarez, who said he reported the incident to then-city manager Michael Marrero as soon as he discovered the injuries, launched an investigation. He further stated he, HR, and the legal department discussed the investigation during regularly scheduled meetings while the investigation was underway, and recorded statements were uploaded to OFR's internal affairs database, something HR had easy access to. So, before we get into Mata's comments, we want to question why Sheen said he could only find pre-disciplinary hearing documents when the city provided us with an email chain that included former Assistant Chief Saul Ortega's 6-page investigation summary. We also want to point out Sheen claims HR Director Charles Hurst recommended the guys be fired when the emails show Hurst concurred with Alvarez's decision to write up one employee and place the other on a 5-day suspension. Anyway, back to Mata. During Mata's radio appearance, he said Sheen discovered emails were deleted by Alvarez pertaining to OFR investigation, and this threw up a red flag, and it led them to believe there had been a cover-up. Could Alvarez have deleted emails, and could it have been for nefarious reasons? Sure. What we find entertaining is we already know Mayor Javier Hoven routinely deletes his emails because he admitted it. But for Hoven, apparently that's okay. When Hoven sat down with another radio program back in March, he said he had not deleted any emails between himself and T2 Professional Consulting, the firm he hired for $338,000, without consulting legal counsel or his fellow council members. I didn't. I don't have any government official emails. This is a false narrative once again by the local paper to be able to create something that is completely false. He said, I have over 3,000 to 4,000 emails, and we know that some of our IT people have been leaking our emails and they've been going through, and the thing is, it's been vetted. That is a completely, totally false narrative by the local paper. In one of our editorials, we ask Hoven, which was it? He doesn't have any government official emails to delete, or he has 3,000 to 4,000 emails? And if it's the latter, why hasn't the OA received a single one pertaining to T2 despite at least two separate Texas Public Information Act requests? We have since come to learn through the Texas Public Information Act that as of March 7th, Hoven had more than 11,000 emails in his government inbox, 186 in his sent file, and nearly 1,200 had been deleted. We've asked for those sent and deleted emails through a public information request. We won't be surprised, however, if there aren't any T2 emails among them. After all, the T2 contract instructs them to send all correspondence to hovenformayor@gmail.com, which again, we're still entitled to under the law. One last thing on the subject, we've requested all emails pertaining to hacked and leaked emails. We've received tons of emails warning employees about phishing attempts, none complaining about leaked or hacked emails, and nothing demanding or discussing an investigation. Odd, don't you think? Again, back to Mata. Here are some of the statements he made during the interview we find quite entertaining. Statement 1. A few months ago, or a few weeks ago, the former daily paper that we have here, Odessa American, did a story to preempt this whole investigation. According to Oxford, the definition of preempt is to take action in order to prevent an anticipated event from happening, forestall. We weren't trying to prevent anything from happening when we filed Texas Public Information Act requests and wrote stories based on those efforts. We would argue that, if anything, the city took preemptive actions. The fact is, city officials refused to talk to us about why they hired Sheen and his law firm for $195 to $375 per hour, and they went to the Texas Attorney General's office to argue they shouldn't have to divulge any documents. Ultimately, we won that battle March 29th, and we received the email chain we talked about earlier that proves the HR department knew about the original investigation by Alvarez. Statement 2. On one side, you got the Odessa American. They're trying to sell papers. They need to sell papers. They have declining subscriptions, subscribers. So they got to do whatever they have to do to sell papers, and making the story about the city of Odessa, the council, it gets people riled up. But it's not always factual. We guess Mr. Mata doesn't understand the purpose of newspapers or how they work. Let's see if we can make this simple enough for him to understand. When news happens, we interview people, we obtain documents, we report what they convey, and hopefully people will see the importance of that, and they pay for it. We didn't abuse the OFR cadets. We didn't try to hide the documents outlining the investigation, and we didn't stand in an open forum and give half the story. We honestly don't know whose facts are correct. We simply reported both sides of the story. It's up to the citizens of Odessa to decide who they want to believe. Thanks to us apparently riling you up, Mr. Mata, they now have more details than they would have otherwise. Statement 3. This is some of the issues that we were having with Marrero. Just, you know, it's one reason that we didn't never broadcast this is because he still has the future ahead of him. I mean, he still has to be employed somewhere, so we didn't want any of this to get out. We did this internally so we could find out what we needed to do to improve, to move forward, to improve the OFR, to improve all the departments in the city. Statement 4. But you know, whenever you have media requesting this information and we have to give that out to them, you know, this stuff starts getting out, and it is a good thing because the public needs to know about this also. These two comments were literally uttered in the same breath. We didn't want any of this to get out, and it's a good thing because the public needs to know. Mata is complaining on one hand about having to release information to the media, and then kinda sorta praising the media for getting the information out to the public. Makes us wonder what other things are going on that fall under the same category. Don't worry, we'll keep trying to ferret those things out despite the roadblocks. City Animal Services reopens by Mercedes Cordero. After announcing Thursday that they would be closed because of increase in symptomatic animals showing signs of an illness, the City of Midland Animal Services reported they will be open for normal business hours. Dog intakes are still on pause until April 25th, according to city officials. Animal Services will offer dog food in residents that have taken in stray dogs and are waiting for the shelter to reopen for intakes on April 25th. Anyone surrendering a dog will need to schedule an appointment and wait until normal intake resumes or try other avenues such as a nonprofit animal welfare organization. To set an appointment, call 432-685-7420. Hours of operation are 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Tuesday through Friday and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday. The shelter is located at 1200 North Fairgrounds Road. This is Christine. I'm continuing to read Odessa American for Saturday, April 15th, 2023. Where Do All Those Taxes Go? By Adam N. Mitchell. The annual tax filing ritual sends Americans across the country scrambling to gather documents and brace for the inevitable confusion that results. For a lucky few, it can be a straightforward process, but the tax filing can be a complicated and time-consuming ordeal for many, particularly for lower-income taxpayers. As we reconcile our tax bills, it's natural to wonder who pays taxes and what do they fund. You're not alone if tax day triggers fear and confusion. Even Americans who use tax software or an accountant face a seemingly endless list of questions. The process is a black box to most people. Information in, tax refund out. This is because politicians on both sides of the aisle get carried away with designing new tax programs without considering how the whole system works when families file their taxes. As a result, the United States has at least six sets of rules on how a child might qualify a family for tax benefits, 15 programs targeted at higher education, 18 tax-advantaged savings accounts, and 14 deductions for people who itemize. The tax of merely describing how these tax programs work is the subject of hundreds of pages of IRS instructions and countless inscrutable forms and worksheets. The Rube Goldberg contraption that is our tax code not only sucks up time and resources to understand and follow the rules, but also sows confusion about who pays taxes, how much they pay, and what all the money we send to Washington each year actually goes to fund. Government data shows the federal tax system is highly progressive. The highest income Americans pay a disproportionate share of income taxes and face the highest average tax rates across all federal taxes. Income taxes, the taxes we file in April every year, account for more than half of federal revenue. Payroll taxes make up about 30%, and corporate taxes bring in about 10%. The remaining revenue comes from smaller sources such as estate taxes, tariffs, and excises. For all but the top 10% of income earners, Americans pay more payroll tax than income tax each year. The U.S. Treasury's Office of Tax Analysis estimates that across the entire federal tax system, the bottom 20% of income earners pay on average close to nothing in taxes. For these individuals, payroll and other taxes are offset by refundable tax credits such as earned income tax credit and child tax credit. Where does all that revenue go? Some believe that welfare and foreign aid make up for federal spending. Others point to defense and corporate welfare. The truth is that health entitlements, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare, and Social Security make up the largest programs in the federal budget, a combined two-thirds of all spending. These entitlements and interest on the national debt are projected to consume every dollar of taxes paid in about 8 years. Amazingly, the trillions in taxes paid were still $1.3 trillion short of what Congress spent in 2022. This is nothing new. The feds have run a budget deficit every year since the early 2000s. It is also unsustainable. Eventually, something has to give. Either Congress will raise taxes or Congress will constrain spending growth. Let's hope they find some savings before raising our taxes. As is evident every year around tax day, the tax filing process is complex to the point of obscuring how our federal fiscal system operates. So, in addition to bringing spending in line with revenues, which are at historic highs, Congress should also strive to design a tax system in which Americans can more easily understand what they owe in taxes and why. Congress can take simple steps such as simplifying child and dependent benefits, consolidating education tax subsidies, and simplifying the taxation of savings and moving more Americans to the simpler standard deduction. Taxpayers deserve a system that is fair, transparent, and efficient. Adam N. Mitchell is the Director of Tax Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. He wrote this for InsideSources.com.
Check. Check. Stepmom safety concerns are a weighty family issue. Dear Abby, for Thursday, April 20th. Dear Abby, I married a widower 8 years ago, and we are very happy. However, his three grown daughters were angry that he moved on with his life after the death of their mother. To keep peace in the family, I have tried to kill them with kindness, and while we've made progress, I feel they take advantage of me and sometimes treat me with disrespect. Although we don't swim often, we go to the expense of opening our pool every summer so the children and grandchildren can swim. Frequently, when I check the pool after they leave, I find my pool floats have been damaged or destroyed. All three of his daughters are very large women. Not once have they mentioned that they damaged the floats or offered to replace them. I bought a new chair for my deck recently, and I noticed that it has a weight limit of 250 pounds. At least two of his daughters, maybe all three, exceed the weight limit. I'm considering selling the chair because I'm afraid someone will get hurt. Is there a way to let them know they shouldn't try out my new chair without turning it into an awkward situation? Pool Protector. Dear Pool Protector, unless you want to be perceived as the wicked stepmother, your husband should handle this delicate subject. He should point out to his daughters that if they or their children break something, he expects them to tell the two of you about it. If it happens repeatedly, they should either replace the item or bring one of their own. Because you are concerned his daughters will break the chair, consider buying foam mats that they and their kids can cover with beach towels and use when they're on the patio. Furniture you do not want them to use should not be made available to them. Dear Abby, would it be wrong to tell my ex-husband's girlfriend, who he left me for, that he still tells me he loves me and can't move on because of me? He says that no matter how many times I have told him, I don't ever want him back. He has also said he doesn't plan to remarry, despite the fact that she wants to get married and is being led to believe he loves her and wants to marry her. I have the text messages to prove it. I don't want her to be hurt like I was. She moved away from her family to be with him. She has no family here, but she has a great job, and he's just using her for her money. I know I shouldn't care, but I think she should know how he feels. I hate that he's lying to her and using her. Should I send her the texts I have or leave well enough alone? Wants to warn in the South. Dear Wants, you can try to warn this woman by sharing the texts your ex has sent to you. You probably will not be believed if you do, but at least make your conscience will be clear, and you can go on with your life. May I make one more suggestion? Block him on your devices. Your ex is very bad news. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach, Thursday, April 20th. Dear Dr. Roach, I am a 70-year-old woman, mostly healthy, apart from well-controlled high blood pressure. Looking at me, people assume I am skinny, but I have a well-concealed huge belly along with my thin arms and legs. I look like an olive stuck with toothpicks. My diet is healthy for the most part. I eat snack foods, deep-fried fast foods, or sweets only rarely. I have read about how to eliminate belly fat, but there is so much contradictory info, each claiming to be the best. What are truly effective ways to help eliminate body fat? Answer. First, I would want to be sure what you really have is belly fat. While there are men and a few women who have that body shape due to fat, I have seen far too many cases of liver disease where the abdominal cavity is filled with fluid due to high pressure in the liver, and ovarian cancer where the abdomen is filled with fluid due to tumor. I would want to be sure you had been evaluated for these and other concerns, especially if this is a change in your normal body type. If it is abdominal fat, there's no magic diet. What works for someone else, even your twin sister if you had one, might not work for you. For this reason, one single type of diet does not fit all. It may take patience and trying several different options before finding what works for you. General advice includes avoiding the foods you noted to eat sparingly, eat lots of vegetables and whole grains with fiber, modest amounts of fruit, several servings of nuts and fish weekly, and no more than modest amounts of meat. Advice from an expert in weight management may be of great benefit.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.